ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Vidura uvacha,
ye
tvaya vihita, brahman, sutaha, prachami pradishaha, te rudra,
itena,
harim,
siddhim,
apuhu,
katoshat,
Vidura-duvacha
Vidura-duvacha
Yethaya-vihita-brahman
Yethaya-vihita-brahman
Sutta-pachini-bahishaha
Sutta-pachini-bahishaha
Terudra-gite-na Terudra-gite-na harim
Terudra-gite-na harim
Siddhim-ahu-pratoshyakam Vidura uvacha
Vidura said
Ye
Those who
Kaya
By you
Abhihitaha
Were spoken about
Brahman
O Brahmana
Sutaha
Sons
Prachinabhasha Akin Prachinabhu
Take
all of them.
Rudra-gitena
by the song composed by Lord Shiva.
Harim.
The Lord.
Siddhim.
Success.
Abhu.
Achieve. Pradyosha. Having satisfied. Come. What? Translation, Vidura inquired from Maitreya, O Brahmana, you formerly spoke about the sons of Pachinibahi and informed me that they satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead by chanting a song composed by Lord Shiva. What did they achieve in this way? Srila Prabhupada's purport. In the beginning, Maitreya Rishi narrated the activities of the sons of Pachinibahi. These sons went beside a great lake which was like an ocean. Unfortunately, finding Lord Shiva, they learned how to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead by chanting the song composed by Lord Shiva. Now their father's attachment for fruitive activities was disapproved by Nara, who therefore kindly instructed Pachinibahi by telling him the allegorical story of Paranjana. Now Vidura again wanted to hear about Pachinibahi's sons, and he was especially inquisitive to know what they achieved by satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Here the words Siddhim Apuhu, or achieved perfection, are very important. Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 7.3, Manushyanam Sahasveshu Kastya Yatati Siddhaye. Out of many, many millions of people, One may be interested in learning how to attain success in spiritual matters. The supreme success is mentioned also in Bhagavad Gita 8:15. Ma upeti purnajama dugaya nashashvatam natnu vanti mahatmanaha sansidhim padamam vitaha. After attaining me, the great souls, who are yogis in devotion, never return to this temporary world, which is full of miseries, because they have attained the highest perfection. And what is that highest perfection? That is also explained in that verse. The highest perfection is to return home back to God, so that one will not have to return to this material world and transmigrate from one body to another in the dream of material existence. By the grace of Lord Shiva, the Prachetas actually attained perfection and returned home back to Godhead after enjoying material facilities to the highest extent. Maitreya will now narrate that to Vidura. Om Ajnana Tirthandasya Vinanjana Shulakta Chakshuri Tamyena Tasma Visi Vrave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mahavishnam Sapitamyena Bhokale Sanrupa Kadamaham Tadati Sapanam Namaste Shamanunati Satchiputra Matra Sarukam Rupam Tatsya Vajam Kuru Purimantirindo Shavikam Radha Kundalini Rama Bhogadi Kanada Vasam Prakhtale Sakarita Kikaya Sivarunta Nato Vasam Vidurvacha Hetraya Gita Rama Sutta Prajiva Vishava Vidurvita Nahari Siddhimapu Patoshiram Vidurvita Maitreya Brahmana, you formerly spoke about the sons of Prachinibahim and informed me that they satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead by chanting a song composed by Lord Shiva. What did they achieve in this way? Since the Srimad Bhagavatam is, there is a natural connection between the narrative, the ongoing narrative, it may not be presented chronologically, but the narrative has an internal coherence. And it's logically, here we go for another microphone adjustment. Take two. This will be the last one. What was wrong with it? But now it's great. There's 1 millimeter to the left. With no temple. Precision. German precision. There's an internal coherence to this, to the presentation of the embedded narrative of the Bhagavatam. And therefore, I'm going to make a shift here a little. We go back to the previous verse, which is quite fascinating, verses. Which were an addendum there. You can say, maybe not an addendum there. They're presented here by the mercy of one of the great commentators in Srimad Bhagavatam, that's Vijaya Vajkirtha, who had commented that there is a series of verses here, three or four verses, that come within this chapter itself. And it's a very long chapter. There was 85 verses in this chapter. And it's still this devotee, Vijaya Bhaskirta, he wasn't feeling satisfied with 85 verses, and he found discovered that there was actually another 3 or 4 verses that came in the middle and at the end here. And that's something that Sanskrit scholars are lighting. They call this text critical, and those who have studied the Mahabharata in Indology and in Sanskrit, you'll know that they have many versions of Mahabharata in India. There's maybe, there's hundreds you can say, but there might be 15 or 20 considered authentic versions or versions that are critiqued by scholars, Sanskritists. And they had this system for establishing the authenticity of the text. However, their hermeneutics are, they have this certain systems whereby they say that the Bombay edition is the standard edition that's accepted as the standard Mahabharata, and the Kashmir edition has this 90% perfect, and this one in the Madras edition has this one. So they have all the different versions, and then analyze ad nauseam which is the one. But really, luckily, we have Srimad Bhagavatam, and Srimad Bhagavatam is given to us in Parampara. And the Parampara that we're receiving from Srimad Swami, the original commentator of Srimad Bhagavatam, or the most important commentator of Bhagavatam, sets the standard of the parameters, you can say, and all commentaries after Srimad Swami are commentaries on his commentaries. And then we go right down through the contemporary commentators on the Bhagavatam, where we can say contemporary to the medieval commentators on Bhagavatam, to the Goswamis, and then to Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, and then to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada's commentary on the Bhagavatam is unique in many, many ways. But one of the ways it's unique is that it's the first time that there has been a word-for-word translation and commentary purport on the verses in English and in other languages like Sanskrit. I mean, there are definitely commentaries in Tamil and commentaries in many, many vernacular languages. But it's certainly the first time that there has been commentary made in the same system as the Vedic system, the same system as the Parampara system in the English language. It's very significant that way. We have a full, exactly the same system, and that's why Prabhupada quotes the same acharyas and quotes the same verses, many of the same verses. And we have compiled books. There have been many compilations of selected verses from the Bible and selected verses of Prabhupada. And those selected verses of Srila Prabhupada are the selected verses of the acharyas. Prabhupada will be quoting the verses. The prominent verses of the Bhagavatam that illustrate and demonstrate the important points of the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition, particularly. And this has become the Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. His disciples compiled a book called the Granthala. Some compilation of beautiful verses of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur according to categories. And these are verses that we should learn. One time Srila Prabhupada heard Upendra Prabhu, who was one of the founding devotees of the Australian Natura, Bali Madan and Upendra Prabhu. If you read Prabhupada's book, you'll find out about these great devotees that came here to Sydney and to Melbourne and started the Hare Krishna movement. Nobody here knew anything about Krishna. And anyway, he became a very intimate, he was a secretary of Prabhupada's and very close to Srila Prabhupada. And one time Prabhupada heard Upendra was talking with other devotees, laughing and being very kind of jovial and perhaps a bit frivolous. And Prabhupada called him into his room and said, asked him if he was gossiping. So Upendra, he had been gossiping. He said, no, Prabhupada is talking about the word gossiping. And Prabhupada said, but the mood that there was gossiping. And Prabhupada said, his life is very short. We haven't got time to waste in mundane talking and activities. We have to focus our attention on Krishna. And he said, previously he used to learn so many verses. He was learning a lot of traditional verses that he learned from Gita and Bhagavatam and Nipradarshan. And he said, you're not learning the verses so much now, and therefore you're more inclined to gossip and to the other sorts of talk. And so he instructed the Upendra Prabhu to continue learning verses.
I heard this recently from Kumar. I'm not sure if anybody saw that, but there's been so much sharing on the internet, you know, Zoom classes on the internet from this from devotees around the world. And there's a devotee in the Waco Temple, which is in New Jersey these days. And Madan Gobabu, he's been organizing his classes with every second devotee in this one. And amazing class. And one of them was Paul in Ireland. He zoomed in from Ireland and he spoke about his great transcendental adventure book. And of course it was 1 hour in Mecca. And the devotees from all over the world were listening to him. He related that story. And that kind of hit me that one of the reasons why we learn verses is to discipline the mind. And the verses act as a kind of a code. Sometimes I would say, well, what's the use of learning verses? If you don't know the English translation, if you don't practice it, it's useless. It's just like a parrot, reciting like a parrot. And that's true to some extent. But verses have play a very important part in our development of Christian consciousness, and they act as a code. They are code breakers, the triggers. So when we have to make a decision about something in our life, a choice, or when we need a quick reminder, or to kind of recalibrate ourselves, to rewind, to reset, then the mantra will help us reset. Whatever it is, not that special, but whatever it is, we can reset, we can grab that and just say, okay, we have to tolerate this Melbourne heat and cold. My wife tells me every day, none of us are just not there. I'm always complaining, it's so cold here in Melbourne, I'm going to go somewhere where it's hot. And she says, when you go somewhere it's hot, it's going to be too hot. So it's so hot here, I want to go somewhere it's cold. So not for special to come there. But there are many, many verses that help us succumb some of them on a bit. Verses that will come as we learn them, particularly in our early days in training, they become guiding beacons for us, you know, to help us to recalibrate, to get back on track, to refocus. So that's one thing that I took from Kongru's presentation the other day. Continue to learn verses. And refine verses. We've been doing that recently. Verses that we learned many years ago, perhaps we didn't understand the word for word, or we didn't know the word for word, or we weren't pronouncing it correctly. We should trust that the verses which we recited are at the speed of the light, of the light. But remember, maybe slow it down a little bit. And then try to, so there's so much we can do with one verse and refine them and practice them and pronounce them, try to pronounce them correctly. Okay, so this, what we're hearing now is that was all about the Paramaharam connection to this presentation of Srimad Bhagavatam. And I was told to prepare for. I said to Sukhavi, it's not time to prepare, I've got a busy day and I'm going out tonight, you know, Friday night, I have an appointment. And so I said, I had a quick look at the verse. He said, okay, it's 1B. And I said, all right. So before I went out, I went ahead with the 1B and I took some quick notes. And I woke up this morning and that was it. And then I thought it wasn't 1B, it was 1-1. 31. So we're going back to connect with 1B, and it's a similar topic, of course. And in today's verse, we heard that Vidura speaking, and he's inquiring from Maitreya, and he wants to know, what did these sons achieve, the sons of Prachinbhai, what did they achieve? What's the perfection? And that's my connect back. What is the connection? The perfection or the what we're aiming to achieve in life, the Parangati, Vishuddhati, is to achieve the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to go back and back to Godhead and not return. Samsiddhi Paramangataha, Prabhupada wrote that verse from Gita, 8:15, that the highest perfection is to return home, back to Godhead. Okay. Okay, so that's my point of departure. Samsiri Paramangatara. And we go to one big bhakti, which you heard yesterday. Krishna Doya Jiveshu. You could probably sit on this verse for 4 weeks. Doya Jiveshu. Akunta Jnana Mahani Gali Syadat Nanubhuyat Apavagas Samsitehe. Some very important key words here in this verse. Bhakti Krishna Doya Jiveshu. If a living entity is developed in Krishna consciousness and is merciful to others, if he's developed in Krishna consciousness and merciful to others, and if his spiritual knowledge of self-realization is perfect, that's a big call. So if we're developed in our Krishna consciousness, if we're merciful to others, and our development of self-realization is perfect, then he will immediately attain liberation from the bondage of material existence. Like this, immediately. If he'd done that immediately, he would attain liberation from bondage of material existence. If he'd done all that hard work, it's like an over 30 years to become an overnight success. So if you've done all that hard work, then you'll achieve perfection. In this verse, the words doya jiveshu, meaning mercy for other living entities, indicate that a living entity must be merciful to other living entities if he wishes to make progress in self-realization. This means he must preach this knowledge after perfecting himself and understanding his own position as an eternal servant of Krishna. Preaching is showing real mercy to the living entities. Other types of humanitarian work may be temporarily beneficial for the body, but because the living entity is spirit soul, ultimately one can show real mercy only by revealing knowledge of his spiritual existence. As Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Jive Surubhove Krishna Nityadas. Every living entity is constitutionally a servant of Krishna. Once you know this fact perfectly, and when you know it perfectly, you should preach it to the mass of people. Interesting point. Preach it to the mass of people. If one realizes that he is an eternal servant of Krishna, but does not preach it, his realization is imperfect. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur therefore says, Dushtanam Tumi Ki Seva Vaishnava Pratishthara Tare Vir Jangera Gore Thava Harinam Vaila Kaitava. My dear mind, this is a famous one, this is a famous book by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Vaishnava Kaitava. My dear mind, what kind of Vaishnava are you? Simply for false prestige and a material reputation? You are cheating the Hare Krishna. You are chanting. I'm going to write it. The Hare Krishna mantra in a solitary place. You are cheating. In this way, people who do not preach are criticized. There are many Vaishnavas in Vrindavan who do not like preaching. They chiefly try to imitate Haridas Thakur. The actual result of their so-called chanting in a secluded place, however, is that they sleep and they think of women and money. Similarly, one who simply engages in temple worship but does not see the interests of the mass of people or cannot recognize the Lord Jesus, called a Kanishna Adhikari. The Prabhupada quotes this verse from the Lord Kanda. Acharyam eva havaye, pujam yam shadaye, shadaye hate, natha bhakteshu chanyeshu, natha bhakteshu smitaha. So, I'd like to thank Sukadeva Guru. Rather than curse the Guru, thanking my dear old friend for enabling me to say two verses to my response, not one. Beautiful commentary by Prabhupada on this kind of bonus verses, these extra verses in this chapter, chapter 85, 86, 87, doesn't stop, but this keeps coming. Doesn't stop giving, Bhagavatam doesn't stop depending. So he said to me, the way he convinced me to speak, the day before I spoke to Sudhakar, I said, can I come for darshan? And he said, no. And I said, please, no. I'll come and pick up my prasadam. I'm going to order prasadam online. I promise. I'll go to the shopping cart, order my prasadam, and I'll pick it up when I come for darshan. He said, no, you can't. It's against the rules. I was observing strictly. I said, okay, then I hang up. Then the next day he called me, and I thought, he's going to come and find Sukadeva Prabhu. And I said, he's going to say, come for darshan, I'm sorry, I was being too mean. So, how about Sukadeva? Yes, we will, what do you want? And he says, can you be class tomorrow? And I said, what? So I can get darshan in class. So I said, maybe. I said, I'm really busy, I don't have time to prepare. I said, don't worry, you don't need to prepare. It's a really nice verse, a busy verse. It's 1B at the end of chapter 29. So while I'm talking, I had the papers open already. I didn't like to sit down to 1B and I'm reading while I'm talking. Maybe I didn't pass my mind on this. No, I can't because I'm going out and leaving a bit late. And I said, no, I don't think I can. And he kept saying, it's really simple. And it's the topic, and this is how we get people to give class at the last minute. So I'm thinking, okay, well, I'm saying, I don't know, it's going to be late in the night, late in the night, late in the night, to prepare. And then he said, alright, I'll do a conversation. And so one week, and he said to me, okay, it's 1 week, the time he said that 10 times, 1 week. I'm reading in Sunday, so that's what my mind. And then I get here and it's not 1 day. But that's how it got me here. 1 day got me here, so we're going to talk about 1 day. It's an amazing topic, compassion, this doyaji issue. And we hear it in the Bible time, in the Gita, in the Nectar Devotion. And Chaitanya Charitamrita, this is a very important point, and this, what is real compassion? And Prabhupada defines compassion in the Nectar Devotion, where compassion is one of the rasas, one of the secondary rasas, of the 12 rasas that we have of Krishna, compassion. And Krishna exhibits this compassion in many ways, and Prabhupada presents two ways. When he defines a term, in the qualities of Sri Krishna, in the Nectar Devotion, Prabhupada defines a term, they have given an example from the Bhagavatam mission, or from some other source, but mostly from Bhagavatam. So he defines loyal compassion, as somebody who can't bear to see another suffering. The power of the Buddha, that the Vaishnava is loyal, he can't bear to see someone else suffering. And that's the kind of standard definition of Prabhupada as why he's loyal. And then he says that Krishna displays this compassion for the distressed persons when he liberated the kings of Magadha. He put these kings in these dark cells. And when he liberated them, he displayed his compassion, because when Krishna went there, they were in a dark cell, everything became light. Krishna Surya Nandaya Andhaka. When Krishna is there, there can't be darkness. And Prabhupada uses this then example. And the next one he gives is about, it's actually the Vishnu-Deva. It's the example of Vishnu-Deva. Vishnu-Deva provides this example of Krishna's compassion on the kings who are imprisoned in the dark cells and they're liberated by Krishna. Because Krishna doesn't want to see the living entity in darkness. That is compassion. That is, we feel compassion for the conditioned souls and for each other, for ourselves. We feel compassion because we don't want to be in darkness. Ignorance is is something that the devotee learns to abhor. We learn to, we feel like it's something that is fearful for the devotee to be in darkness. If we engage in that activity, it will cover out our direct connection or link with the soul. And so we don't do that. We don't engage in those activities because they're darkness. And Prabhupada back to Godhead is back to Godhead. It's about light, destroying the darkness of nescience. Ignorance is nescience. And so the next one is that Krishna, Vishnu is lying on a bed of arrows, and Krishna comes there because Vishnu desires to see Krishna. He has an intense desire to see Krishna in his last thing that he does in this material world, to see Krishna. And so Krishna appears there with his compassion and his kindness, and seeing Vishnu lying on the bed of arrows, Krishna is crying. And Prabhupada says that these tears are Krishna's compassion for his devotee, for Vishnu. And then Prabhupada explains how the devotee approaches Krishna through his compassionate expansion. That Krishna's compassion is personified, and that expansion of Krishna's compassion is Srinati Radharani. And so the devotee goes to Krishna through his energy, through his compassion of energy, and attracts the mercy of the Lord through the devotee. And that's Prabhupada's final statement in that little section of the qualities of Sri Krishna in the Nectar Devotion. I mean, each one of these, the 64 qualities in the Nectar Devotion, each one of them is a very compact, concise revelation of important terms, important qualities, virtues, dispositions of devotees. And that is the doya. The doya is that the devotee doesn't like to see others suffering. In the Gita, the very famous verse in the Gita where Krishna says, anukampa. He says that out of compassion, out of mercy, teshan yeva anukampa artham. Kimarpa anukampa. Out of mercy for the living entities, I dwelling in the heart of the living entity, destroy the darkness of ignorance with the shining lamp of knowledge. Out of mercy, Krishna gives his compassion for us because he doesn't want to see us in darkness. He doesn't want to see us suffering. He doesn't want to see us make the same mistakes. He wants to bring us back. And he has this mercy. So he reveals. Krishna consciousness is a revelatory process. It's a process that's revealed in the heart. It's a process that's revealed in the heart through the practice of bhakti, by the practice of devotion. It's not a process that's revealed in the heart by jnana. It's not a process by developing just knowledge and becoming, very learned in scripture, or analyzing, or becoming a philosopher of Krishna consciousness, an armchair philosopher. Then the process won't work. That won't be the catalyst for the revelation. The catalyst for the revelation is sevaya, is bhakti, is service. The catalyst for the revelation is submissiveness, pranipatina. That's how we attract the mercy of the senior devotees. Prabhupada said that when Purushit Maharaj was on the bank of the Ganga, and all the exalted personalities from the universe came there. So many amazing personalities came there. All the rishis and munis and yesterday, everybody was there. And he offered respects to them. And Prabhupada said that this offering of respects, this pranam, dandavat, And now it creates a situation where the person offering the respects, he attracts the mercy of the singing devotees, attracts the mercy of the person they offer respect to. And Prabhupada says that there is an inclination then to give shelter, an inclination to give knowledge, an inclination to give revelation, because the Pranipat is the Pranipatam. Say that. And Pranipashana, to inquire with the mood of submissiveness, but to inquire about the nature of the absolute truth. We have a big buzzword in education for the last 20 years, is inquiry learning. We're an inquiry learning school. We do inquiry learning. And they have lots of debates. What does inquiry learning mean? But inquiry learning in a materialistic sense means to discover knowledge and to figure it out myself and to explore and to experiment with different aspects of the relative truths. But inquiry learning in Krishna consciousness has a different flavor, has a different emphasis. And the inquiry learning of the Jivyasu, Tattva Jivyasu in Bhagavatam, and what Prabhupada presents as the inquiry learning, is to inquire about the absolute truth. And there's a particular formula for doing that. And it's not just about exploration, it's not just about experimentation, but it's about receiving the knowledge in Pampara, receiving from authority. So that is how we set that up. Pranipatena, Pariprasana, and Seva. And that will enable us to become qualified to receive and to become qualified means that we become aware, that we become conscious to accept and to acknowledge and to be aware of when we're receiving the knowledge and when we're receiving the information that will help us, will enable us to become fully realized. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the first chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we've just finished the Chaitanya Charitamrita and how we started in the first chapter. And it's a very, very solid chapter of philosophy, spiritual masters, Andrei Rubin, Vishabhata. It's a very solid chapter. And some amazing points are brought in here about the acharya, about the guru, about the deity, about the process, about knowledge, about really Krishna Sagarata Swami is preparing his reader to get ready for this Chaitanya Charitamrita. You have to be in the right mindset to accept this, to receive this knowledge. Not anybody can just jump in to receive the nectar of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's presentation. Krishna Sagarata Swami's presentation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And there's a lot of definition of terms there. Prabhupada defines the Chaitanya Charitamrita in a very amazing way. That he says that Chaitanya Charitamrita means the character of the essence of the absolute truth. The character of the essence, the charita, which is very interesting. Chaitanya's character. And that is something that we really have to remind ourselves about, that Krishna consciousness is about character development, the character of the nature of the essence of the absolute. And that is Chaitanya, who is the character of the essence of the absolute truth. Anyway, at the end of that chapter, Prabhupada's, he makes this point about submissiveness, because Krishna Sagarata Swami is offering the basis to all the acharyas and to the deities and to the great Vaishnavas and devotees before he takes the lessons before he will write the book. And Prabhupada says submissiveness is the cause of proportionate self-realization. Very interesting. I mean, Prabhupada's some of the these sentences of Srila Prabhupada are just like, they're so jam-packed with amazing realization and language and the use of his language. But submissiveness is the cause of proportionate self-realization. Submissiveness is the cause of proportionate. And this proportionate is something that is a constant theme in our philosophy. As they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. So as submissive as we are, we get that proportionate self-realization, proportionate realization. And then in the same sentence, Prabhupada says that will enable the devotee to see Krishna face to face through that submissiveness. You'll see Krishna face as a man sees another man face to face. That we'll see Krishna directly. We'll see the Krishna directly through submissiveness. And that's what this is our teaching. That we're teaching the process of Krishna consciousness. And I think this is really important for us to continue to revise and continue to refine and continue to refocus on. That Krishna consciousness is not something that is ethereal, it's not something that's esoteric, it's something that's very tangible, and something that's very accessible, and something that's very practical. We have a practical application. In the Bhakti Shastri and Bhakti Vaibhava classes and Bhakti Vedanta classes, you have this guiding principle of the Buddha mission, Prabhupada. There's 12 principles of Bhakti Shastri, the 12 principles. And in the 12 principles, one of them is that we want the devotees to apply Krishna consciousness within the mood and the mission of Prabhupada. And the mood and mission of Prabhupada is compassion for the living entities. It's giving Krishna consciousness, it's not seclusion, it's not isolation, self-isolation. It's connecting with other jivas to enable them to progress in their spiritual life. And whatever it is, from whatever stage, the devotees become expert, and the spiritual master is expert in understanding the stage of progression of a jiva, of a living entity, and helping them to progress from that stage, not from another stage. And Bhakti Mutako elaborates on this in many places in his analysis of Adoshava, and the analysis of Bhajan in his Bhajan Rahasya, that we have different stages. Devotees go through different stages of development and progress, and from that stage we follow certain, we focus more on different rules and different regulations to enable us to go to the next stage and to the next stage. And so it's very important that we understand that the application of jiva, of doya jivesha, of being compassionate to living entities, is understanding where the living entities are at. First, understanding how we can connect with them and elevate them in Krishna consciousness. That's an essential point of teaching, is to understand the learner, to know where they're at. What is their background? What do they need now to go to the next stage? And what's the goal? If we don't have a goal, then how can we teach anything? We just be whatever. We just explore, experiment with life. But we're not about exploring, experimenting with life. We're about guiding and presenting and empowering Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada's mission statement for ISKCON is a mission statement of doya jivesha. It's a mission statement of compassion. Anukampa artham. Out of special mercy, Prabhupada has established ISKCON. ISKCON, you can say, is a mercy mission. It's everything. The reason why Prabhupada established ISKCON is to systematically propagate the science of Krishna consciousness to society at large. It wasn't just for a section of society. Prabhupada mentioned that here, and I paused and I may have read it twice, but it's for the mass of people. One should know this fact perfectly and should preach it to the mass of people. One time I was in an educational conference with many devotees from around the world in Germany in the 90s. And many senior devotees came to this conference. Hare Krishna Prabhu had called them from all over the world. Big, you know, Sridharma Maharaj and all the great devotees were in this conference. There's 30-something devotees there, Ramana Mahathir. And there were all these people who had been involved in education over the years and so on. And he said, now we're going to get some education together. Now we're going to make it work. And we do this, we do that, and we do that. So he allocated different tasks for different devotees. But we had different family sessions and we'll get together. And it was facilitated by a father of a devotee who was a monk, really. He was an academic, second day of this group. And he was a very wonderful facilitator and very insightful educator. And he was connected because he thought it was a devotee. So he came to Germany, and he's from Ireland. He came to Germany, and he was facilitating. So he doesn't know anyone from anybody else. So he doesn't know Bhakta Joe from Kridana and Rajan. So everybody was the same thing. So then everybody was sort of out of line, he gets like, get something. Say, wait a minute. And then he's like, it's Islam. You don't know about that, it's Islam. He didn't know, so it was really cool. Everybody was like, okay. And anyway, this second lecture, he said, now you've got to have a mission statement. You can't have an education system without a mission statement. So we had to go, you know, groups. You know, 5555 and all around the room, and you're making a mission statement. Who is it for? What are you doing? Who is it for? How are you going to achieve it? And I had to answer these questions, and we're all brainstorming in groups and came together. We were walking around to groups and we were saying, you've got to really focus on your audience. Who's your audience? It can't be for the whole world. Every group said to everybody. And he said, this is crazy. You guys are like, what do you think about one group next to the next? He said, what is it with you guys? You can't focus on, what's the audience? Somebody's got to be big, it's got to be everything. But that's the nature of Krishna consciousness, that it's for everybody to propagate what Prabhupada's saying. The first thing, to systematically propagate the science of Krishna consciousness to society at large, to the whole world. For everybody, Krishna consciousness. And then, after that statement, and there are many reasons why this first mission statement is just like something which is, it's legendary statement to be unpacked from an educational point of view, because it has knowledge value, it has knowledge skills and values in it, and Prabhupada doesn't come from that so-called, you know, professional educational background where, you know, people discuss these aspects of cognitive objectives, and you know, he didn't come from that background, but he perfectly encapsulated it in his first mission statement. And then it's to teach the spiritual techniques, right? To systematically propagate the knowledge and to teach and to educate, properly so educate. So it's to propagate. And then he used to educate people in the technique of spiritual, the techniques. And then that's to, in order to for the imbalance of values in society, to bring about unity and peace in the world, after we educate people in the techniques of spiritual life, is to bring about, to, you know, that imbalance of values. I'm not getting that verb in there, but it's to... And so this is the first statement. The second statement of Prabhupada's, his commission statement, is to teach people about the consciousness of Krishna. To teach people about the consciousness of Krishna as given in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Number two. Number three is also to teach people To bring the roads together, closer together, so that they can understand that they're part and parcel of Krishna. To teach that they're part and parcel of Krishna. Number four, every one of them is directly related to this doya jivesha, compassion, to teach the Sankirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The Sankirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is doya jivesha, is to give mercy to the living entities through chanting Hare Krishna, to give knowledge, to give process. So Prabhupada giving knowledge, giving process, giving the goal, everything within his son, within the initial statement of his son. And therefore, it's such a potent machine that this doesn't, it won't stop, it can't stop. It's like that. Ever expanding, and it will continue to expand. And Prabhupada says very in the seventh canto of Bhagavatam, where Prahlada Maharaj is a personification of mercy. And we heard Gopal Deshwar talking on the Lord Krishna's appearance day, the prayers of Prahlada Maharaj, his instructions. And his instructions, Prahlada Maharaj's prayers and instructions to his classmates, they are about joy education. He doesn't want to go to the forest and be secluded and chant the holy name in the forest. He could, but he doesn't want to do that. Arjuna wants to do that. But he's Krishna and made him. So the Prahlada Maharaj's prayer is that he wants to elevate the conditioned souls, bring them out of darkness. He wants to bring them into the light of Krishna consciousness and do whatever he can to do that. So in 761, this is the verse Kamara Shekhaya Dhamma Bhagavatam, I believe. 761?
Yes.
Yep, 761. So the Prabhupada says there that the Krishna consciousness movement is anxious. That the Krishna consciousness movement is anxious to serve human society. That's our mission. We're anxious to serve human society by teaching people to perform devotional service. To educate people in the process of, in the system of the spiritual techniques. We're anxious to do that. That's our anxiety. We want to give people this technique. There are so many alternative systems around today, in society today, on the internet and in groups and organizations for self-realization. I mean, yoga has been more than a household word for the last decade. Right? Everybody does yoga, from the top CEO to the street sweeper to the anybody, everybody and everybody that does yoga these days. Yoga is like, you don't do yoga, yoga is a different part of life. And we have such an incredible offering to make here in the yoga scene. And devotees are making incredible inroads in the yoga scene. Because Bhakti Yoga is without saying that we've got exclusive proprietary rights over yoga, but we acknowledge yoga, because yoga is Bhagavad Gita. We acknowledge the yoga of Dhyan Yoga, of Hatha Yoga, we acknowledge yoga. We have an issue with them. But the issue that we have with it is that it doesn't give direct perception of the soul, so it won't. It's like the humanitarian works or the philanthropic work. It won't give full satisfaction, atma-supersivity. And that full satisfaction will only come from connecting with Krishna and Bhakti. And so we say these are stepping stones, and they're acceptable processes and preparatory processes. Preparing people for accepting the technique and the knowledge of Krishna consciousness that we have to provide, and we do that in a way that is compassionate and preach with compassion. When Prabhupada talks preaching, you can say teaching. And so we teach with compassion. And teaching with compassion means to empower, means to guide, it means to be there, the sage on the side. It means to be there for the conditioned souls and to encourage. There's a process called the nurtured heart approach. It means you you fan the flame. You see a spark and you fan it, and it becomes a flame, it becomes a fire, it becomes an inferno. And that was Prabhupada's process. So having Prabhupada's very Krishna consciousness throughout the world, he would nurture how to approach. He nurtured young bhaktas. He saw the bhakti in every jiva, in every living entity. And we won't see a conditioned, completely conditioned soul because of our conditioned nature. That's what we're seeing through our vision. But Prabhupada would see through the bells and the whistles and the long hair and the dreadlocks, and he would see through that and see the atma, the soul. And if somebody was able to engage in some little bit of service, stop and not pass your heart, then Prabhupada fanned that. And through that fanning, the devotees, it became towering infernos of bhakti, by fanning. And in the lecture on this point, on dvaya, on compassion and equal devotion in Los Angeles, in 73, Prabhupada said that when we come to the we devotees have compassion for all living entities. And he gave an example, a practical example of how we can apply compassion to the living entity. And he said, somebody comes to the temple and they mop the floor of the temple. And that's their capacity, that's all they can do. They don't have capacity for reading, for studying, for kirtan, or anything else. They can't read us. They're too dull, but they mop the floor. And he said that we accept them in, and we acknowledge their service. And we glorify them for doing that service. And Prabhupada says by doing that, their bhakti begins to develop. They become attracted to it. And then finally, through the attraction of the devotees, they become attached to it. They become attached to sweeping the floor, mopping the floor. And through that mopping the floor, they start to become free from their false misconceptions and their false conceptions of who they are. And they start to peel away the layers of ignorance, and the light starts to emanate from the soul. And they become pure devotees. And there are some fascinating and amazing stories of people who came to the temple, and still today, who come to the temple fully conditioned, covered, and in 10 years, in 20 years, or in 2 years, 2 days, they become, effulgent, and things start to fall into place for them. And that's how Prabhupada really was teaching, that Krishna is Baba Rajanana. Krishna is taking the essence of our seva. He doesn't need our service, but he takes the essence of it, and by accepting our service, we become purified. And we become attached to Krishna. He's accepting us. We want to be in. Living entities. The part of our human psyche is to belong. We want to be part of the group. So we want to be in Krishna's group, but we've made mistakes through anything, through anger, through so many reasons. We've made mistakes, and we ostracize ourselves from Krishna, from his association, from his group, the Krishna club. And now we want to be back in that group, we want to be back in that club. And when he accepts us, we feel safe, and we feel contented, and we feel acknowledged, and we want to stay there. We want to stay within that organization, we want to stay within that umbrella, that ashraya, that protection of Krishna. And we receive that by the little encouragement from the devotees, encouragement from Krishna. So, Prabhupada's practical application of Dvaita Jiva is to encourage everybody who comes. Anybody who comes to the temple is a qualified lead. It's not, in the call center you have cold calling. You call someone and try and sell them an insurance policy or something. They don't have an idea about insurance policies, and they're not thinking about insurance policies, but you call them and say, you need an insurance policy. Wow, an insurance policy. So that's cold call. They're not qualified leads. But anyone who comes to a temple, or takes a book, or comes to a restaurant, or approaches you in the street, because they request like a devotee, they're qualified leads. And therefore we have to work with them as much as we can to make sure that they stay in Krishna consciousness, to develop in Krishna.
It's online, it's been paid. Yes.
to develop their Krishna consciousness. And that's something that Prabhupada was giving a very practical example of in that lecture, that we encourage everybody to develop their Krishna consciousness, like Prabhupada encouraged some of the devotees. The other day, Gaurangaka was sharing that when Prabhupada, when he cooked the famous 9 o'clock offering that Srila Prabhupada cooked, and Prabhupada instructed them how to cook the sabjis, the ghee sabjis, and how to cook the puris, and Gaurangaka cooked that puris and sabji, and Prabhupada had taken some of it to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada examined the puris and asked who cooked these puris. They were like amazing translucent balls, you know, it's puffed up. So, and they said, oh, Gaurangaka was cooked them. And he said, he was following the principles. And I always thought that meant he was following four principles, but Gaurangaka explained the other day that it meant he was following the principles of cooking. He was following the menu. Therefore, he became a great, you know, cook and a great publisher of cookbooks, because he follows principles. And my point here is that he got the mercy of Prabhupada encouraging. He saw that he had this inclination, he saw that he had, you know, propensity for this cooking, and encouraged him. And then he had a lifetime of cooking from that. And many, many examples of this that Prabhupada did, but to demonstrate the compassion for the living entity, no education. And just to wrap it up, I mentioned that it was such an expansive topic, and we haven't mentioned Lord Chaitanya's mercy, the Mahavadani Avatar, Paramakuruna, Mahavadvijana, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Lord Nityananda. There's nothing like that. Their process is just bliss. Kevala Ananda Kanda. They're the essence of all avatars. Avatar Sava. See only. The crown jewel of the essence of all avatars. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Nityananda. Because their process is very simple. Bhajo Bhajo Vai Chaitanya Nityananda. Sudhira Vishwasukhoi. Chant with great faith, determination, enthusiasm. Bhajo Bhajo Chaitanya Nitaya. The names of Lord Chaitanya Nitaya. Vishaya Chariya Seya Sinanjaya. Mukhe Bhagavad Hari Hari. Give up sense gratification. When we get this taste for chanting the holy name of the Lord, which is simply Kevala Namakanda, it's just this, we'll automatically give up our sense gratification, our attachment for the senses. And in the third verse, which I must have for, he goes on to say that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is so powerful that even the animals, Pashupalvibhu, even the animals, by hearing, they dance in chanting. There's nothing like this. In the three worlds, there's nothing like the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda, who come to the storehouse of love and Godhead. And I was thinking on the way in here about in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, who explains the science of Krishna consciousness to the devotees? He's very dear to me. Priyakritama. Anyakritama. There's no one more dear to me than whoever is explaining the science of Krishna consciousness to the bhaktas, the devotees. And Bhakta Sundi Sakachati, Krishna says that he's explaining the science of Krishna consciousness to Arjuna because he's a bhakta and he's his friend. The Prabhupada says in many places that the devotees go beyond this, anyakritama, to not just preach Bhagavad Gita to the devotees, but they take it outside the temple. And they want to teach it to everyone, and therefore to propagate Krishna consciousness in society at large, and to educate everybody in the spiritual techniques to correct the imbalance of values, to create unity and peace in society. Now, that's the real mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Krishna is given to his devotees, and his Sarvamangalitaya to those who surrendered and reciprocated with him, but in the Chaitanya Lila, when Krishna comes as Lord Chaitanya, the mercy comes to everybody. It's not no discrimination. And in Veda Acharya, he personified this Doya Jadeshwar. He could see the suffering of living entities who are absorbed in smarter activities, absorbed in the Kamakanda activities of the Veda, and sense gratification. And the only way he could see to enable these living entities to stop their suffering in this material world, to cease the suffering in this world, and to give them some kevala ananda bhakti, to give them some pure bhakti, blissful bhakti, is for Krishna to appear himself. There's no other way. Krishna has to appear in his most merciful incarnation. Mahavadanyavata, as Rupa Goswami says. Mahavadu is Mahavadanyavata. And he's a Mahavadanyavata because he gives access to the topmost process of self-realization in the age of Kali through the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. And Amartya Das Thakur says the same, that he is the Sri Krishna Chaitanya called Doya Kaurava, that he is the most merciful. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the most merciful incarnation of the Lord. And that he's saying that he's merciful because he's delivering the Papita Bhavana. He's delivering the most fallen souls. And Maharaj was like saying, I am not the most fallen. So in order for him to fulfill his namesake, he should give me the mercy. He should liberate me. He should give me shelter. I just love to speak. This is the Padupakala. When Prabhupada preached to the Indian community everywhere in the world, in South Africa, in New Zealand, in Mount Hall, in New Zealand, Auckland, in throughout America, in the UK, in London particularly, in London extensively, when Prabhupada met the Indian community members, in Mauritius, here in Australia, his message, a little bit in Australia, but his message is that Bhagavad Gita is called the Manushyatma. The Parupakara is to give mercy to living entities. The supreme mercy that we can give to the jiva is Krishna, the realization of Krishna consciousness. To give the lightness, as Krishna did for the kings who were imprisoned in the dark cells, when Krishna appeared there, light. As Krishna's cried tears of compassion, for Vishnudeva, Ananda, Arams, the devotees cried tears of compassion for the suffering condition of the materialists who are suffering in the material world. And we give them the opportunity of access to knowledge, to technique, to processes of bhakti, so that they can become fully inspired and enlightened and empowered to become free from the darkness of ignorance. And that's real compassion. That is the great issue. We'll finish here. Are there any questions or comments? Prabhu? I guess I have my hands. This is very good.
Thank you, Guru. Oh, you begin your class by explaining Krishna's compassion when he saw Vishnudeva on the bed of arrows and he had tears in his eyes. So my question is, see, one place we understand when we read Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is telling Arjuna that see how in my universal form all of these soldiers will be dying, and he himself orchestrates and plans the death of Vishnu and all of the soldiers. And then he wants to establish Yudhishthira Maharaja as a ruler also. So when Krishna is already planning it, and Krishna, he knows past, present, future, and he knows that Vishnu will be lying on the bed of arrows. So still the battle happens. This whole aggression happens, and then Bhishma Dev is on the bed of arrows. So then this is Krishna's when this CST is in his eyes, what aspect of him is making having those tears because seeing the body of his devotee in pain, but he himself has planned it to have done no more, less than just trying to figure out what, because he said it's compassion of Krishna, then it's Krishna's soft-heartedness. He's just trying to understand where it is coming from.
Nice question. Thank you. One response is, immediate response comes to mind, is that Krishna, when Krishna comes to material world, he sends his entourage and everybody comes and it's all prepared. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes, and Jagannath Mishra and Satyamata and all the devotees are sent first and they take birth in Bangladesh and all of Kolkata, even South India, and the whole narrative is set for Krishna to appear, for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to appear, for Krishna to appear in material world. So, like you said, Krishna knows past, present, and future. He would know that Vishnu Dev would end up there on the dead arrows at the end of the Kurukshetra battle. So, what is his tears? What are Krishna's tears in when Madhyashoda captures him and binds him? What are those tears? And what is Krishna's. In each of these instances, in both of those instances, of Krishna's tears when Madhyashoda is chasing him, and Krishna's tears of compassion for, they're not both the same tears, but Krishna's tears of compassion for Krishna. Is Krishna absorbing himself in this yoga maya, this pastime of the lila? So he's not breaking his role, isn't it? He's come to this material world. He comes like a human being. He comes as if a human being, in human form, but he's never under the influence of the modes of human nature. He's never under the same conditions of that human being. He has a human form, but he's not a human. So he has the capacity to express emotion. If we feel sad, when we see somebody dying, a loved one dying, we feel sad, that has a real substance, that emotion has real substance. It's not that it's just because of our conditioned nature, it's because that emotion is real. In the spiritual world, there's emotion of happiness. You can't say that people die in the spiritual world, but Krishna manifests this emotion because they're part of his eternal, they're rasa, it's a part of rasa. And this is a rasa that he has, that Vishnu fulfilled his dharma right to the end. He fulfilled his role that he came to this material world to fulfill. And Krishna fulfilled his, even though he might have gone against his word and he might have attacked Bhishma with his chakra, with the wheel. But that's part of the lila. Everything that happens with Krishna is part of the lila, and it's orchestrated by his potency, by his yoga mind potency. And so Krishna's not going to come and say, I knew you'd end up here on the dead of our earth. He's going to come and maintain the whole process to the end, and therefore there's a consistency in the flavor and the mood of what's happened, of what's going on in the narrative of the Mahabharata, the great epic, and Krishna never jumps out of role. Today, on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he has an open, he continues to maintain his position in the Lila. And so the Lila is consistent, and there's no rasa dasa, there's no interference of the rasa. It's interesting there that Prabhupada mentioned that those tears of compassion of Krishna, that Radha Rani is the manifestation of Krishna's compassion. He takes it from there that actually Radha Rani and the devotees are the manifestation of Krishna's tears, his compassion.
Krishna Sarvajasa wants to emphasize at the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita
and the guru, and the there is many spiritual masters, and the shikshaguru and the dikshaguru are equal, and that the quality of the shikshaguru and the dikshaguru has been probably underplayed a lot, and now through Prabhupada courses and disciple courses and through so many realizations of devotees are sharing, is that we're trying to establish, we are establishing the importance of Shiksha. Shiksha Guru is very essential understanding. So Krishna will appear as a devotee. Not necessarily my initiating Guru Maharaj, spiritual master. That is the manifestation of his mercy. But all the devotees are the manifestation of Krishna's mercy, who are instructing us and guiding us and encouraging us and nurturing us in our bhakti. They're all to be considered to be our Shiksha Gurus. So that's one way that we can, that Krishna will manifest in the form of the devotees, particularly in the form of the Guru. And in the form of Bhagavatam, in the form of the five purport processes that Krishna is appearing. And how is it that we can judge the level of reciprocation that we're experiencing? That's different for everybody, but there are some standard benchmarks in the Nectar-devotion, standard benchmarks in the Gita, for a character evaluation, for example. We have lists, we can say we have checklists in the 13th chapter, checklists in the 16th chapter, checklists of character knowledge, the virtues. We can go down that list, Satyam, Doya, are we developing this Amanita? Are we developing this Atma Vinigraha? Are we developing sense control? So there's our checklist. And then from the checklist we have kind of benchmark. We can benchmark that's for our character. We can benchmark our program, our development by how much time we're wasting. That's one of the negative devotion that the devotee he uses every second of his time in Krishna consciousness. So that's one of our kind of benchmarks we take it off. Our attraction to material energy. Attachment to Krishna, how attached are to Krishna. They're part of the benchmark. So we have a checklist, we have a benchmark, and we have a more subjective, you'd say they're objective benchmarks, and we have subjective, an internal check of benchmark, and that will be our test. Where do we get our test from? What is it that we want to do? Do we feel inclined to do regularly on a daily basis? That's a manifestation of our attraction to Krishna. That'll demonstrate our natural attraction, how much attracted we are to Krishna consciousness or to material consciousness. That's an internal subjective check. Actually, I really have a taste for hearing the news of Donald Trump or whatever it is. Or I have really an attraction to understand the intricacies of the royal family. You could spend a lifetime just hearing about Prince Philip and whatever, Harry and Meghan. You could spend a lifetime there working out what she did away and what he did and what he said and how they live now and no matter that could be our test. Or is our test to hear what the Guru is going to speak to in Maitreya, in Bhagavatam. So I really want to hear what Sukadeva is going to say. So I really want to read the next chapter in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Because that's my test. And that's the psychology. The psychology is that we're human beings are beings of habituation. We cultivate habits. And it's said that habits are developed by things we do, whether you develop a habit. and then how it will actually determine our character. That's what we initially do, that will become our natural kind of a default character by the things that we do.
Another question is around, it's regarding to, perhaps it's my wrong understanding, but you are equating preaching as an education.
Preaching?
As an education process.
Yes.
And also there are principles of education. How do they apply in our preaching activities? Because understanding, for example, the purpose of the state missions of education in preaching from the personal level and also to the mass people. I'd like to understand that part because it requires also preparation or understanding. And then most of us, we are exposed to preaching based on whatever little understanding we have, if we have some, and the effects of that as well.
Can you just summarize that in one sentence? Because of people coming and going, I got a little bit distracted, but that seems like a very interesting question that you're formulating.
It is more trying to understand preaching and as education and the function that we have to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because from the personal level to others as well. Most people, even in our congregation of devotees. So if we don't have proper understanding of that, what that means, for example, I do appreciate what you mentioned about the formation of character and how we have to train ourselves and others as well. If we don't understand that function, that principle, how can we be engaged in preaching and our natural experience or immediate experience is somehow or another in different degrees, or we are exposing preaching according to our level of understanding.
Thank you. I will just quickly finish up with this, and that's a good place to bring this to summarize what we've been trying to present here today. That if one realizes, everything in the entity is constitutionally serving Krishna. One should know this fact perfectly and should preach it to the mass of people. If one realizes that he is an eternal servant of Krishna, but does not preach it, his realization is imperfect. So I think that the realizing this fact is the preliminary, it's the groundwork that we have to do. We become more effective as preachers or teachers of Krishna consciousness when we realize this fact that we're eternal servant of Krishna. When we become convinced of that fact that we're Jivasupa, Krishna needed us, then we can preach effectively. But until we do, we're training and we'll preach effectively in terms of expanding our circle of influence. And until we do, we're in the process of training. We're getting ready for the marathon. We're training, we're doing our laps, we're going the hills, we're testing ourselves, we're preparing for it. And that preparation is refining our character, refining our consciousness, refining our understandings. And then when we're ready, Krishna provides us with opportunities to expand that area of influence so that more and more people can take advantage of the preparation we've done, the hard work that we've done to expand Krishna consciousness. And yes, preaching, I do equate preaching with teaching. There is a science to it, but it's an art, and the art of teaching is very much revealed by Krishna. It's because of His mercy to the living entity, He reveals how we can best present Krishna consciousness in a particular circumstance, to a particular people, at a particular time. And if we have confidence in Krishna, and we're bold about our confidence in Krishna, then we'll always be capable of presenting Krishna consciousness according to our level. Yadidayatari Krishna, Krishna Pradesh. Whoever we see, we can speak to them about Krishna according to the message that we've heard from Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Vandara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Shri Prabhupada ki, Gotam.